This show is sponsored by Dollar Shave Club. Get high-quality razors sent to your door each and every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Now go to dollarshaveclub.com/church. That's dollarshaveclub.com/church. Or go to joeydiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. This show is also sponsored by Nature Box, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks right to your door. Snack smarter in the new year with healthy and delicious treats like Santa Fe corn sticks and French toast granola. Support this podcast and get 50% off of your first order. Go to naturebox.com, promo code Joey. That's naturebox.com, promo code Joey. And for all the oil and wax smokers out there, get the number one vape pen on the market. Go to nailedatlife.com, mention Joey Diaz, no spaces, and they're going to give you an extra 20% off of your order.
You're slipping, cocksucker.
It's not playing.
It's not playing.
Hit it from the beginning. Hit it from the beginning, dog. That's the whole song. There you go. You bad motherfuckers. Wednesday, April 2nd. Are you fucking kidding me? Or what? Crank that motherfucker, Lee. Even it out. That's Carlos Santana dropping. Used to sell fucking bubblegum on the border and shit. With a guitar and a fucking switchblade. Are you kidding me? Hit that motherfucker, Lee. Crank that motherfucker. 60 years old, still whacking on a Wednesday. Motherfucker changed the game and shit. They didn't know what was going on. He's got bongos. Who gives a fuck? Drop it. The church of what's happening now, bitches. Wednesday, April 2nd, you bad motherfuckers. Watch that muffler. We're making it happen today, baby. Oh, shit. The Flying Jew. Emilio Rivera. Oh, shit. What's the story, Lee? Talk to Uncle Joey, cocksucker.
Oh, what's this? I feel great, man. I'm excited.
You got some Mediterranean lunch. What happened?
It wasn't that good.
And the Jews fucking kill you. They kill you. They charge you an extra 10.
It's kind of the same thing with my girlfriend. We always try to go to new places, but just go to the same place you always go to. Every time I've gone to two new Mediterranean places this week, and each one has disappointed me.
Unfucking believable. What's the combination?
It's Jews. The last two ones I went to were owned by Jews. You should have seen the picture I tweeted you today with the beard. It was down to here. But they gouged the prices and it wasn't good. It took 30 minutes. I had this whole plan for in between podcasts and I couldn't do any of it.
So now the other place you used to go to,
just all Mexicans.
Even the guy at the counter is Mexican and they're selling Mediterranean food.
Yep.
You understand? That could have been Carlos Santana's fucking nephew. You understand me dropping it?
Yeah.
At the Mediterranean place.
I had the Mediterranean, but you know what? You get what you get.
Fuck it. No more Mediterranean food. Just
why?
Go, because you got to go to the one that took you to the dance. Stop trying other places. If one is solid, that's it. It's over.
You never get the urge to go to a new place?
No. Not with one word for you. I go to Green Apple Chinese restaurant. Their food is maybe a 7 if it's fucking on a good day, if the good Chinese guy's cooking.
The good one.
It's a 7. But I go in there, the baby likes it. I get some hot and sour soup. I get the French style fucking filet mignon with some steamed rice. Yeah, tremendous.
Like you say, if it works, stick with the restaurant.
If it sticks with it. Everybody wants to go to the new place. Ain't no fucking new place. That's what Chinese food's about. That's why they got the lunch special. You hit that motherfucker up for the lunch special. What are we talking about here? I was telling Emilio and Lee today that this is how I started my day. I got up early, wrote, tweeted, took a shower, ate. I had a protein shake, did kettlebells, got home, hooked up with my wife, and we're going to come over here and hang the poster and clean it up a little bit. And we stopped at 7-Eleven. My wife was thirsty, and so was I. My wife wanted the little diet water, the watermelon water from fucking 7-Eleven. I was just going to get a container of water. I go in, but when I'm paying for it, I see some dude with earphones and a hood trying to be cute in front of the 7-Eleven, and he's trying to get my wife's attention. My wife is looking at the fucking cell phone, so finally I come out, and he looks at me like, what's up, dog? And he's it was weird. I knew he was crazy. He didn't look like he was on drugs. He just looked like he was out to ruin somebody's day today.
Yeah, man.
So you think I said, so?
Yeah, Jesus. I know. So there's people that's their mission, dog. They're out to.
How to fuck up their own day.
Yeah, they don't know what they want. They don't know what they want by their life. So they're gonna go out and start trouble with somebody. And just you could see he was just looking for something. And I come in and I get in and I say nothing to him. All right, no problem. Whatever. All right, whatever. And I close the door and whatever, fucking idiot. And as I look up, he's giving me the fucking finger. And then he's like, fuck your fucking wife too, motherfucker. Dog, I put the car in drive and I just drove at him. And I could feel like the car drove up over the thing at 7-Eleven, you know, like the top. Oh, fuck yeah, dog, you know I'm out of my mind. I don't give a fuck. And he went back. So as I pulled away, he ran towards the car. Look at this fucking guy. So now I was just going to go at him with the car. But I want to see, I didn't think he had a weapon on him. But he punched the glass. And I'm like, dog, he punched that fucking, what kind of car do I have? Not the Subaru. It's the other one. The one my wife, 10-year warranty. Not Mitsubishi, but the other one. The one that won the car, the fucking near car and driver. Are you fucking kidding me? He punched that car twice in the second. First time he hit it, I heard it shatter, but I thought it was the glass.
A Hyundai.
Then he hit it again, a Hyundai, a Sonata. He hit it again, and I heard it shatter again, and I knew his hand was done. And I seen him hold his hand. Then he kicked the car. Then I went at him with the car, and I seen him fly out like a TV show. And I just kept going. And he didn't throw nothing. He's like, fuck you. And people were there. It was fucking ugly, and I just kept driving. I don't give a fuck. And my wife was like, what the fuck was that, Joey? You tried? And I'm like, no, I didn't try to hit him with the car. The car went out of control on its own. You know what I mean? Exactly. It was one of those fucking bad Sonatas. One of those ones crazy. That Hyundai got to recall that motherfucker.
Steering and shit will be fucked up.
And you know what? What's crazy, guys, is that I would have hit that motherfucker with the car. Like, I'm that stupid sometimes. Like, I forget. You know what? You want to fuck with me? That's one thing. I don't give a fuck. But with my wife don't bother nobody. My wife don't know nothing about nothing. She don't know nothing about nothing. So I made a U-turn. I looked at the guy, and he was still holding on to his hand. He's definitely going to a hospital because I heard the hand shatter twice. So fuck him. Like I said, he was out to ruin somebody's day. And you know, my main man's in the house today, Emilio Rivera from fucking everything.
I was going to say that.
He's from everything. It doesn't even matter.
But IMDb, like some people work once a year. I don't think you've stopped. It has like 80 things.
It's amazing. And you go to a hotel room, you're trying to relax, and Collateral comes on the other day, and I'm watching that scene. That's one of my own time. Get out of the way. You know, that whole thing he says to you. But on top of that, you're on here because you're a super fucking good guy. And you've been there. You've woken up some mornings at 9 in the morning, going to the store to get, and you bumped into a motherfucker, Emilio, maybe 20 years ago.
I was probably the other guy, bro.
The other guy, trying to ruin somebody's day.
A lot of times I woke up just trying to fuck up my own, how I could fuck up my my life was pretty good, man. It's just like I would find ways to mess it up, you know? Because sometimes I think I was just too hyper, bro. I was just too fucking hyper. I needed to do something. Always, it's stupid. You know, it was stupid.
You're young. That's what it means to be young, really.
And then be young and on drugs. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, be young and on drugs. You know? You're even dumber. You know you're even stupider. You know, oh, my God. You know, you wake up. And I saw this kid when I pulled away. I wasn't mad. I would never even dream of calling the cops. You know, it's not my style. Exactly. It was just one of these things that I felt bad for him. After it all went down, it didn't even have to go down that way. You know, I feel bad because I would have fucking ran over his toe. I would have, when he flew out, it looked like a TV show. Like he just got out.
TJ Hooker or something.
It was like TJ Hooker.
Jump over the hood.
And, you know, I will hit a motherfucker with a car. I mean, that's the saddest thing. It's the saddest fucking thing. But, you know, it's who the fuck we are.
Well, that's too bad that you had to go through that. You know, like, it's, we know you're a tough guy, Joey, back in the day.
No.
No. But see, what happens is that don't ever go away.
That doesn't ever go away.
It's locked in there. It's locked in there. A lot of times we're holding our mug, man. But once in a while, something like that, and it all explodes. All the stuff that you've been holding down will come out. That's dangerous, man.
You know, it's funny that I was never one of those guys. And if something did go down, 9 out of 10, it was over a friend of mine that I got involved or something. But that's been for a long time. And today it was just a real, usually I walk away from those things. I see what that's for. I saw what it was. I saw what it was as soon as I got in the car. But if he would have kept talking to me, I would have kept giggling. I told you that fucking Jew the other day in Miami told me to go fuck myself. And I just laughed because he was Jewish. I love when somebody Jewish tells me to go fuck myself. Finally, somebody's real. These motherfuckers walk away and tell you, oh no, because we wrote the project out. We wrote that character out. This Jew in Miami told me, go fuck yourself. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's. I'm not going to say it's good that you hit him, because, like, God forbid, what if you knocked him and then he knocked his head and he died and now you're in jail forever? But, like, I'm a timid guy, and I've always, like, gone home after a situation like that. Like, I wish I'd hit him or done something like that. So, like, what do you feel after that?
I felt the same thing I felt when I was there. If I would have saw him reaching, I would have ran him over. Like, I would have had a justification. If I would have saw him reaching for a weapon or a knife, I would have run him over. But I didn't. And that's why I kept going. And listen, man, I've been in those situations before when I was younger. and I went back for no reason. That's when you get crazy, when you go back. Yeah, you already got out of the situation. You got out of the situation. Why the fuck are you going back? Because he tore your shirt? Because he called you a faggot? Because he hurt your feelings? You're out of the situation. You know what? 7 out of 10, you got to think the cops are on their way, and you don't want to be there. Let them look for you. If they're going to look for you, let them look for you. Let them do the fucking footwork. Get the fuck out of there. Once I'm out of a situation, I'm out. That's experience right there. Yeah, see, when you're 21, that, you come back
that,
like
that
an
pride,
asshole.
That pride will fuck you up.
Yeah, that pride will fuck you up.
Every single time, brother. You know.
Are you nervous about parking in this area now?
Do I look fucking nervous to you?
I don't know. Fucking, I was on the last day of getting my sticker back for re-registering my car, and I was nervous about driving it. So, I mean, I get nervous about everything, so I don't know.
Nah, don't worry about it too much, bro. All this is going to be a little warning, bro. Nothing's going to happen, bro. You know what I'm saying?
It's amazing when you've had a couple different lives, like Emilio has had.
Yeah, man.
You've had a couple. If you sit,
I've had about 8 different lives, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm, I've been lucky, man. You know, God's been building me. You know, God got my back, bro. He really did. Sometimes I don't understand why, but thank you, man. You know.
He does. He does. I look at this baby girl. It's 14 months old. So after that, after all that drama, I went home and I had a half of medical marijuana chocolate bar and I ate that motherfucker, right? To calm me down, right? Because you know me.
Calm me down.
Why am I going to eat a Valium for when you got a chocolate fucking chip cookie or whatever that's got THC in it? I would never even dream of eating a Valium or a drug anymore when you got a half a fucking Kalubi bar. It's got about 100 fucking whatever's in it. And I ate half of that. And then I went to Studio City and I went to Story Time with my wife and my daughter. It was like 40 fucking kids. And I sat there with a bunch of kids and watched the lady sing. It was one of the most entertaining things. I thought she was just going to read a book. No. They fucking sing songs. The fucking bus rolls around the track, whatever the fuck. You got to move your arms. Hello. You got to wave. Oh, it's fucking tremendous. She caught me. She caught me the fuck up. After 20 minutes, I caught myself. I had to sit down. I was embarrassed. I was jumping up and down with little fucking kids.
When you eat one of these candy bars, I haven't got high in 23 years, bro. But how long does it take for you to hit? Did you?
30 minutes tops.
Well, it takes a while. Then, like, before you can't just take it, you take a hit of a joint, boom, you're there. You're there.
No. This takes, and you know what? If you know how to chew it and it gets into your mouth, you know, your mouth takes those motherfuckers right to your soul. When you got to chew that THC in your mouth, like those Krispies. Like today, it was like a Nestle's Crunch, only vanilla white chocolate. So I had half of it from last night. That's what I ate. When I went on the road this week, I didn't sleep well. So when I came back, I didn't want to fuck around. I wanted to get good rest. Because I'm one of those motherfuckers that'll go to bed at 12 and be walking around at 4. I'm one of those retarded motherfuckers. I get up every night at 4 just to look around. It's what I do with it. Sometimes I close my eyes and pray and go, Lord, give me another hour. If it gives me another hour, I'm fucking good. Sometimes I stay awake. You know, my mind
That's your clock.
That's your clock.
Yeah, man.
So today I slept till 6:30. That's fucking tremendous. And I went to bed at 11. You know, I ate one of those Jupiter bars, and I was fucking gugutz. And then Monday, we ate the thing in the morning.
I
gave him a half a gummy bear, you know, like a gummy bear. At 6:30, we were fucked up by 8. And then I ate another half, because I didn't sleep, so I wanted to sleep when I went home. But I had breakfast. I couldn't fall asleep because I had too many things to do. So I did them in the morning. I had to answer emails and send emails. And about 1 o'clock, I said, let me lay down. I was pretty high on the half a gummy bear. And all of a sudden, I'm like, how can it's fucking 80 degrees out. I ate a whole, I had another whole one. I ate the whole fucking thing. I put my track sneakers on, I put my shorts, and I went to the park with my iPod. I did wind sprints, and I threw some kettlebells for like 45 minutes under the sun like a fucking
right
soldier.
Right on.
I'm 51. I got to get those bones strong. My daughter's going to be fucking 3 years old in 6 months. I got to get her ready for a draft in fucking 16 years. I don't know what type of draft. Anything. Soccer, golf, whatever the fuck draft. You know what I'm saying?
Fuck.
So, no, that's what you got to
do. I don't know how.
That's what I do with it. I get motivated. When I smoke weed, I don't know nothing about sitting around and playing fucking Nintendo. When I smoke weed, that's when I... Bro, when I want to play, like, if you come to me and say, Joe, I got this dude, he's got a half a kilo, he lives on Cahuenga and Burbank, we could get him from the back, I just say, let me smoke a joint and go look at the situation. We smoke that number, we go look at the situation, the path comes right to you. And also next
Well, smoking
thing,
a joint and eating a gummy and a half.
It's the same thing.
Oh, no, it's not.
This weed that's out now, how high? You used to get high on the weed.
Not as high as the
edibles.
But
you get fucked up. You'd pass right the fuck out. It never made you get up and do ballet.
That's true.
Which is my point. True, it's what you do with that fucking energy. You know, when you smoke that plant, it's an energy. It goes into your system. Now, if you want to pass out and eat a White Castle, that's your fucking dilemma. I'm telling you that when the sun is shining on your face and you're a little stoned, you feel like fucking God's touching you. And you're Jewish. You don't need
to say that. Makes me nervous.
You're fucking Jewish, Lee, cocksucker.
Cocksucker.
Everything all right, Lee?
Everything is great. You know what? I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say. I've been spending a lot of time with this girl who's Mexican, and she lives in Inglewood, and her mom's like from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a very white neighborhood. So, like, being white has never really been part of who I am. Like, I never really think about it. But, like, every time we talk, it's like, she's in law school, and she's talking about how she's in, like, the Mexican Association and how this affects her. And, like, is it part of, like, your guys' everyday life? Like, just, I don't think it registers with white people, really. It's like, everything she does, she relates back to being Mexican. Like, I just doesn't...
That's her own insecurities for me, bro. You dig what I'm saying? You know, I'm proud to be Mexican, you know, but I don't hold it back for anything. I don't say, hey, man, you know, we were this and that back in the day. Yeah, we had it a little bit rough, but, you know, you can't be dwelling on that shit, man. You got to just do your thing, you know what I mean?
Oh, it's
otherwise,
not even,
otherwise, you won't go nowhere, you know?
It's not even negative, but she just, like... I think she feels like a responsibility to other Mexican people, like her.
Well, that's a good thing right there. That's
yeah.
A good thing. If she's doing it that way, then I got the question wrong. Then that's a good thing right there. You know, she wants to represent. Yeah. Right. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing, in fact, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You meant it like when you see certain people mention being Mexican a lot.
Yeah.
There's different.
Well, because I'm Mexican. Yeah. Or, you know, I'm Mexican. That's why I don't get the
job
opportunities and this and that. No, she's the way she's putting it. That's a good thing.
Oh no, it's a great thing. But just for me, a white kid from Boston, and it's never really part of my thought process. I'm not like I got to do this for the other white Russian Jews.
No, because if you think about it, everything that's been done, you know, pretty much has been accomplished has been a lot by a white man. You know what I mean? Yeah. So this already been proven. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like me. I do my thing, and I represent my people. A lot of times the characters I play, they're not positive characters, but you know what, they got a lot of dignity, bro. You know what I'm talking about? And I always will give you that. You know what I'm saying? Because you know, even the bad guys got dignity. They got heart and they got morals. You dig what I'm saying?
I've met his girlfriend, let me tell you something. A couple of weeks ago we were talking, him and I. And she's a first year law student, which for a girl where she's from, you gotta give her props.
Right on.
You gotta give
her props. Beautiful, man.
And there ain't nobody there splitting that bill. This girl is she ain't singing the blues, she gets on a train. You know what I'm saying? She gets on a train and comes in. He picks her up. So this bitch ain't singing no blues. And she got a job with the DA's department. And just from meeting her, she got an internship for the summer. And I could tell that she's going to be good at what she does. She's going to be a proud Latina woman. She's going to be good at what she does. But in the same token, she's going to do something. You know what I'm saying? She's going to really try.
Special one.
She's going to do something special. You know, when people get in trouble, you and I have gotten in trouble. You know, when we get in trouble, we're acting out something. It's somebody who talks to us who turns our life around. It's somebody who, and she has the potential to do that. Right. Sometimes it's a DA. Sometimes a DA who comes into the room and says, listen, man, I've been where you've been, and this is where I am now. Let's get out of this mess. Let's move on. And you sit there and go, I just gave myself up or whatever, but I know that there's hope because this lady just told me where she fucking grew up from.
Yeah, man.
You know, anybody could go to law school with credit cards. I could tell that she's getting it all on loans. You know,
her
family ain't fucking rich. They don't have a cup. They're not out, you know. And it's very nice to see, man.
How old is she, bro?
23?
Oh, she's a young girl.
He's 25. Yeah. She's 23. This is a young old fucking love.
A long time ago. Time's on your side, bro. That's beautiful, man.
It's great, but it's just like, every time I go to visit her, I'm not nervous anymore, but like somebody got shot in her complex the other day. It's like a new gang came back, and her mom's like a 60-year-old mom, but apparently like whenever we walk in the neighborhood, everyone waves to her. But it's just like, I can't imagine growing up in that situation. And it's just
you know, it's because you're foreign to it. But like, I mean, that's how I grew up in it was just part of everyday life, bro. I mean people were dying around you, man. You know, I mean, it's a fucked up way of life, but it is what it is, bro. But after a while, it just becomes, that's home. You know what I'm saying? Just learn how to duck, man. You know, when you hear gunshots, hit that floor. That's, you know, even in the house. That's you know, my mom, all of us knew, you know, everybody hit the floor, you know? And even sometimes like, if a backfire, you could tell it was a backfire because there's a difference between a drag fire when you hear a bullet, because a bullet, it is just breaking the sound barriers, which the noise is, bro. You know what I'm talking about? So,
okay.
It's amazing. I didn't like what happened this morning. Because it happened in front of my wife.
That's the thing. But see, like you see, we walk away and feel you were by yourself.
Yeah, I don't like that shit. I don't like my wife seeing me trying to hit a motherfucker with a car. I don't like my wife to, you know, I love my wife and I respect my wife a lot. And it's amazing the life I used to lead, that I had no respect for the person in the car with me or the person waiting for me. And I don't want her to see that, you know. So when I talked about that today, it was just to tell you about my fucking day. It wasn't in a way to, I didn't want my wife. I felt a little embarrassed the rest of the day. You could tell something was up when she was hanging the curtains. Wasn't that I was mad at her. She's not mad at me. We had a good time this morning.
You're protecting her, bro.
Yeah, I don't like her to see me go off. I don't like her to see my potential, you know. And it's amazing what you could do. And when it scares you and you say, you know what, I'm not going to do that no more, and I moved on, you know. Did you have a particular moment in your life when you said, I don't want to do this no more?
Yeah,
I got this little acting gig going. I'm gonna stick with it, and maybe something will happen.
But you know what, brother? You know, like, and that's the thing. Like, because my life was, most of my life was a violent guy, and then when I got clean, like I say, it just settles. It's never gonna go away. It's there. You dig? And then you know what, bro? You learn to smile because you don't want that to come out of you, because you know the damage you can do. You know, because when you go, I go a lot. You know, I'm gone. You dig what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you don't want that to come out. And I've even being clean and sober, it's had to come out maybe 9 times, you know, in my 23 years, which is pretty good because it's come out all the time. But it was stuff that, you know, somebody broke in my car. I caught him. It was beautiful, you know. I mean, you broke in your car and you actually catch the thief. You know, there was two of them, and I went off. You know, I mean, it was, I did more than I should have, but you know, hey, you know what, disrespectful, you know, you're gonna learn. Maybe I saved their life by doing what I did. You dig what I'm saying? But yeah, you know, maybe 9, 10, or 23 years, which is pretty damn good. But that monster is always sitting there, bro. Just don't want, and you find ways. Like, the best thing to enjoy is smile. Smile and counting, you know, count. It sounds stupid, but it works, man. At least it does for me. You dig? And but it's, you know, sometimes it's instant. You know, it's like that. It's like, it's, you know, you threaten me, it's on, bro. You know, so you push me, you don't touch me. You know, it's gonna go. You know, and like I said, I've been blessed, you know, because, man, if I don't fight again in my life or hurt somebody or get into altercation, I'll be the happiest man, brother, because now it's really weird, because even when you do something bad, I have that feeling that it bothers. Like you say, you felt bad. I like that, because you're a good man, bro. You know, like, even after you did something, even though they fucked up and you hurt them because they fucked up, they tried to do something bad to you, it hurts me. My heart hurts, bro. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and when you get clean and sober, it took so long to get my heart clean again. You know, you start reminiscing all the shit you did, all the bad shit, and then you get clean again. Now you gotta fucking cleanse yourself all over again, because it stays with you, bro.
It does stay with
you. You know what I mean? It's not good, man. That's because you're a good man, though, bro. That's what it is.
No, I have to. Now you've been clean and sober 23 years.
Yeah, sure. Coming up in May will be 24.
And when did you get into acting?
Right about a year later, when I started, when he was able to talk, like, I was crack cocaine had really messed me up, so I couldn't really keep my words together. So about a year of recovery, I was able to speak. My eye wasn't twitching no more. My hand wasn't twitching no more. And then I started getting into it, you know.
So how do you get in? Okay, so Joey, you started with weed, did coke, and did a couple other things, but mostly coke. How do you get to crack?
I was hooked on crack for about 4 weeks myself, and to 98. On the way home from the Comedy Store, they used to sell it right by Man's Chinese Theater, in between Sunset and Hollywood Boulevard. And one night I saw him out there, and I thought it was coke. So I pulled over and bought it, brought it home. I tried to snort it, and then I realized it was crack. No, and then I fucking, the next night I got a coke can.
Yeah.
And I went over and I kept doing it. Every night I go over and get $40 worth of rock and smoke it. And then one night they gave me soap.
Yeah, that happened. Really pissed. Or wax, bro.
Or
yeah,
wax.
Yeah.
They fucking pissed me off. And it was funny. I went to El Paso to stop smoking crack. I went to do a weekend in El Paso, and El Paso was big blow. So I said, well, I'm down here. I won't do crack no more. I just do coke. And I did coke for the 5 days, and I got off the crack. Wow. So if not, I would have been hooked on fucking crack with dirty fingers and shit.
Yeah, well, see, my thing was, I was on heroin for 11 years, and I kicked heroin by doing crack.
What, you know? Shooting it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, fuck. And see what, and I can't do needles, man.
No, you know what? I hate needles, bro, but it made you, you know, you just the high overtakes the needle part, you know. But what it was, you know, is that crack cocaine, that's a devil scene. It took me 10 times, bro, to do it. And then finally, I didn't get it. I go, what's the big deal? And then finally, I guess I was hitting it wrong. When I finally hit it the 10th time, I said, oh, shit, this is what they're talking about. And I ran with it. It was ugly, bro. It was ugly.
Jesus Christ. What made you go from heroin to crack? Like, isn't it two different kind of...
I was such a trash can joke. See, because I was such a hyper guy. I was wild, bro. I was a wild man. So the heroin would bring me you know, slow me down a little bit, because I was on a roll, you know. And I was a trash, what you call a trash can junkie. I did a trash can junkie. I tried everything. I would try, like, I put heroin with, then do some acid and some PCP and see where it would take me, you know. And it, some of the most trippiest places that you ever, I'll never go back, and I hope to never go back again. But that crack cocaine, man, really, man, that's, there's no, you can't stop. You don't stop.
Jesus. You know what, man? I have a weight problem. Thank God I never did. I none of that ever came into me.
We'll put you on a 4-week crack diet. You'll be looking like Slim Jim.
You're going to lose the weight, but you're going to lose your mind too, brother. You know?
Fuck it.
But
I can't even. You need that. Getting up in the morning, stabbing people at the 7-Eleven. You'll be down to 140, but fuck at that point.
You have Joey Diaz running you over, bro.
I know, Jesus. I saw this video today. It's an old video. But it's this woman on, like, the streets of, like, New York or something, and she's covered in paint, and she's just, like, kind of rolling on the streets, and, like, her friend came by, and she said she was a heroin and crack smoker. I was like, fuck. Like, I can't imagine what that's like. Like, seeing what it does to people, but then having the urge to do it still. I can't. Like, thank God that never happened to me.
It's like fucking smoking cigarettes. You can walk into 7-Eleven and buy a pack of cigarettes. It's like fucking, you know, so many other things that are bad for you that...
Yeah, you very well put, bro. Because you don't know what's messing you up. But what it is like, you're starting to get a bigger tolerance for it. And you're thinking, wow, I could do more and more. But it's really, that's when you start getting messed up. After a while, it just takes control. You're not getting your high normal. You're just doing it to be normal.
Fuck.
Yeah, man.
So what we know, what our listeners probably know, what got Joey off of, like, what made you change or stop?
I was twitching. My eyes were not, they were, you know, you remember Marty Feldman, that crazy eye? That's what my eye was doing. I was pulling out my own teeth, bro, because I could.
Just because you could?
Because they're all loose now. You know what I'm saying? They're all loose, you know?
What?
And it's sometimes too, like, to show off, you know, fucking stupid shit, right? And I started thinking I was invincible, bro. I was doing some, I can't talk about some stuff that I did because I don't want to incriminate myself, but I did some fucked up shit, bro, you know?
Y'all do when you're in that fucking level. Yeah. I still, every time I'm on Sunset Boulevard, yesterday or the day before, I had to go to Hollywood, and I was on Sunset on that side by Vermont. And I was thinking about this guy I had. They used to sell me coke on Western and Sunset. Emil, I didn't know his name. I didn't know where he came from. I knew nothing. All you knew that after about 12, you went to Sunset, and you went to that Burger King and made a U-turn, and he come running from behind the car somewhere. He spoke Spanish. He didn't talk to you. He asked you what you wanted, and the first thing he did was put a coke rock in your nose to make sure you weren't a cop. There was no talking. There was no conversation. You go, pull over. He put a coke rock in your nose, and he didn't have it in paper. He just give it to you in your hand. And then he'd run away. And that was it. That was his fucking day. You know, so
can you imagine that shit? That's not a fucking horror movie.
But that's the thing, guys. Like... Luckily for most of the people listening, like, this is you can say that it's just what happens when you're on it. Most of the people who listen to this are like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Anybody who has been on drugs, anybody that listens to this and has been on drugs for 2 years and over and has gotten into the late night vampire world of drugs knows that there's no boundaries. There's no boundaries what you're going to see at night. I remember living in Seattle in 95. If I'd stay out to do comedy, I would miss the bus to go over to where I live with Josh Wolf. So I'd have to stay at this cook's house. This cook was crazy. He had long hair. He was a guitar player for a band. He looked like the guy from Soundgarden. But where he lived that night, everybody knew that you could go to his house. So they throw rocks at his window. I remember waking up on his couch and seeing two black guys and Lionel, that was his name, White Lionel, smoking crack and going, what the fuck? The other night he woke me up and said, there's a party in the building. And there was a naked lady dancing in a fucking cage. And I'm sitting there going, people are doing heroin. This is the world you step into when you go into those levels of it. There's the first level of me and you, Amelia, and you getting together at a bar.
Yeah.
And doing a couple bumps. And then there comes the level of you buying a package and taking it home with you. Then now you're taking two packages. Now you find a girl that's into it that sucks your dick with ice cubes in her mouth and sticks a tongue up your ass when you're coked up and pulls a dildo up your ass and she don't tell nobody. That's a fucking tremendous party right there.
You're just seeing it all right now.
And then you fucking start. Then you throw her out. because you ain't got enough coke for her no more.
You ain't sharing no more.
You ain't sharing no more. Jeez. And this is 10, 12 years in. You're starting to slip at your job. You already tapped into your 401k. You remortgaged the house. This gets out. Now you're in a dark world. Now your wife leaves you. You got child support.
Progressive disease, bro.
It's a progressive fucking disease. And it's, you know, I tell my wife the other night, I go, I don't know what the biggest miracle God pulled here, whether giving me this beautiful little 14-month-old baby or taking me off the block. If you look at what I wrote, and I didn't know we were going to even talk about this today, but last night we were talking about what would happen to me at 10 to 8 at night every night. If I didn't have a set 8 years ago, because I've been clean 7 years, 8 years in November, if I didn't have a comedy set at night, I would be okay till after dinner. I would eat dinner, and then I would start declining. By 7:30, the fucking stomach would hurt. My bones would start hurting, and I would go deaf. And at that time, I didn't care what that money was in the bank, who I owed it to, when the payment was due. I would get in the fucking car, and I wouldn't even think. I wouldn't even stop for red lights. I would go straight to the Rouse. On Sunset, Rock and Roll Rouse, they have an ATM. They have an ATM right there. I'd pull up in front of the ATM. I didn't give a fuck about no ticket. And I'd take $60. And right from there, I'd make a U-turn on Sunset, regardless. Cops, no cops. And I dipped up in Highland, and right there was where my drug dealer lived. That was the one guy. I had the little Mexican guitar player, El Compadre. Yeah. I had that guy. And I would go over there, and I would snort the coke as I was driving. I would crush it in my hand, and at the first light, on Sunset and Schrader, I would put the dollar bill in and do the whole bag in one shot, or 60. Ugh. Then I would go upstairs, jerk off, and take a big fucking shit and look out the window for 15 minutes and devise how I was going to get my next package at 1 o'clock. Will I get it delivered, or do I have to get dressed again?
Very good, man. That's your whole life right there.
That's your whole life.
What percentage of people in America... Not maybe not to that level, maybe not to 10 years in, but 5 years or so, like get to like a point where it's a problem.
Well, you know, bro, I did heavy drugs for 11 years, and then after 14 months of crack, I was done. Cause you know I was doing $400 a day, bro.
$400
a day. Yeah, man, it's so easy to do. And you see what how I would sell dope not to help out. I always had a good job. I was always a mechanical engineer. I was a functional addict. But what it was, that money that I made there was take care of my family. You know, responsible man. The money I made selling dope was just to keep me high all the time. You dig what I'm saying? And there was a lot of money to be made, bro. But it was just to
was stay. It really so? How much could if you wanted to go out there and not even let's say you weren't addicted, but you just wanted to sell crack? How much money could you make in a day?
A lot. So, especially if you're a person you can trust and you're always carrying, you can make a lot of money, bro. But my thing was just a psych. I needed it, bro. I needed to stay high. It was almost like to keep me, even though I was insane. I thought I was being. It kept me sane. You dig what I'm saying?
I can't even imagine it, man. Like you're saying these words to me, and I'm here. I can't imagine working that hard, working a job. And then working another job to make $400 a day, which is a lot of fucking money.
It's a lot of crack, homie.
I paid $700 a month. My car payment was $300. I paid $300 a month for child support and groceries. Me and Terry were splitting $2,000 a month. We kept our nut low. I was doing $120 a day, 5 days a week. Yeah, okay. I don't know how I was getting the money. I don't know who I was getting the money from. When you add that up, it's a lot of money.
That's 600 a week.
That's towards my last. This is my last 3 months of my addiction, though. You know, it started only like about 40 bucks, 60 bucks. It was 100 bucks a day. And the last 3 months of my addiction, that's when I was losing my mind because it was just too many drugs going in my system, bro. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was like this. And my mom would look at me and cry. She'd say, "What are you doing yourself, man? Literally, bro, my eye would just go that way. It would be all white. And I'd be like, I'm okay. Mom, I'm okay, Mom. Come on. I'm okay.
Fuck.
And still working, bro. And then I would try to put my hand in my pocket so people wouldn't see this thing I had, this little twitch. Because it would not was all the time. It would just calm. You could just sit all of a sudden talking. All of a sudden, start doing this. So I tried to put it in my pocket. And then it looked kind of weird doing this shit in my pocket. You know what I'm saying? It was a...
Fuck.
Bad like, times, bro.
Is that what makes you guys work so hard? Because, like, if you think about it, to make enough money to support $600 a week and $400 a day for a few months, you have to work pretty goddamn hard.
Well, no, it's because you already have your connections, bro. You know, because I was getting it so dirt cheap, and I knew how to make my own stuff. And then, because you get it, pottery, nothing. If you know how to put your stuff together with the baking soda and all that shit, it's really easy to make, bro. You dig? And people just want to go through that trouble. They just rather buy it.
Wow.
It's fucking amazing. When you start dealing coke and fucking around just to keep your thing intact, you know, your little fucking secret intact. I would do comedy any night. Listen, it's no secret, because from the time I stepped off that fucking car in 97 in this town to 2006, I did a set to two sets every night. Because you had the Comedy Store and stuff, and they paid you with a check. Yeah. That wasn't my thing. I'll swing by there because that's where I got my coke on the way home. So I'm going to be there. Might as well do a set. But it was those early sets. I would go into fucking all those Casa Latinas because those things paid you 40 and 50. Rudy at the Ice House,
straight up,
pay you cash. So I always booked those. I had those five nights a week, bro. Five nights a week because I had to feed that fucking hole. And remember, the guy I had, it was 60 a gram, but if I showed up with 40, he wouldn't complain. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, we'll see what was good about that. If you buy an 8-ball piece by piece, it'll cost you $225. I get a whole 8-ball for $80, bro, so that's when I could do my
thing. That's where you do your thing. So somebody calls you and says, I want a gram. You got 60. I got an 8-ball for 90. Bam. I get fucking 2.5 grams for fucking $90. I get five. Now I'll call Lee. I'm going to go, Lee, what do you pay for a gram? I pay 100. Give me 60 cash. Look at this fucking boulder I'm going to drop on you. I still got a gram and a half, and I got $100 to throw away and exactly. $50 cash. You make it happen every day. Like I used to tell you, I used to wake up in the morning. When I lived in Jersey and I was 19, I'd wake up in the morning, go to Charlie's Diner, who's still on Facebook. I still talk to him on Facebook. I'd go in there, have breakfast, and make him give me a 20. It's like Sean Penn in that movie he did when he went crazy, and then he came out. He went to the movie theater with John Travolta. You ever see that movie? With John Travolta and the old guy. Great fucking movie. Very, independent. It was an independent movie, but he came out. He went to the movie with the girl, with his wife, and he goes, listen, I don't have no money to pay for the ticket.
She's so lovely?
She's so lovely. And he pays for it, and he goes, how about $40 for drinks? So he signed in the old days, you could sign $40 from the register and a fucking and a ticket. I would go to a Charlie's, get breakfast, and go, Charlie, give me breakfast, take a $20 register. I'll be back this afternoon to give you that before you close at 5. That 20 got me going. Yeah. Now I picked up a 20 from him, and I give you two bumps, and you go, get me a gram of that, give me a hunt. And now the party started. Bam, bam.
And you're ahead, bro.
And now
you're
I'm ahead. Yeah, now it's 2 in the afternoon. I'm already ahead.
But how do you worry about rent? I understand.
Rent is due when?
The first.
I worry about rent on the 31st. Yeah, that's how the real pimps do it.
Exactly, bro.
Pimps don't worry about rent on the 31st.
You don't worry about shit.
The first time rent comes into your mind is the 26th. You're like, days. So now you got the one dude that you were going to borrow money from, that you got him on the hook. Because I would call a guy like Lee and go, Lee, I'm in a bind. I need $300. And you go, all right, call me, and I write you a check. I got Lee. But then I call you an hour later and go, Lee, forget the $300. I got a handle. My buddy's going to give me a gram. I wouldn't tell you that he's going to give me a gram on the arm. So I already got you for $300. My rent's $450. So I would just wait 2 weeks. If I didn't make the $450, I'd call Lee on the 26th and go, Lee, I need that $300. I'll come up with $150 at the bar. You just put pieces together. I wouldn't worry about rent to the 31st.
That's right, bro. You don't worry about shit.
Nothing to the day before. You worry
about the get high. That was
all you worry about was in front of you. Yeah. What's in front of you today?
Man. But you know what, bro? And that's today. But you know what? In my real life nowadays, I don't worry about shit now.
Me neither.
I don't worry. You know, I never worried about shit, bro. You know, Uncle, because it don't help nothing, bro.
It's gonna be
what it's gonna be. You dig? At the end of the day, worrying don't just makes you
nothing.
Yeah, it makes you get old. It makes you depressed because you're worrying about it. And all of a sudden, it comes out to be okay. So what's the fuck? Yeah. You dig what I'm saying?
You know why he works so much?
Why?
Because he believes. Because at the first of the month, me and him have the same amount of money in the bank, zero. At the first of the month, we all have zero. A lot of people have to go to work. They can't. There's a lot of people that have to get on a bus and take a train and go to work and commit to a job. He commits when he has a job. Yeah. But there's something for it to be the 10th and for you to haven't worked yet. And you're like, I know I'll book something by the end of the month.
I'm good to go, bro. You dig what I'm saying?
You understand me?
You know?
That's a state of mind.
And you know, and the reason, because when you're worried about shit, when you go to a room to go read, they look like you, they know you're worried, bro.
They know you're worried. They smell a fuck. They smell
They see
you,
people
bro.
Fucking 100 people a day, bro. They know who's worried and who's not. I say, this motherfucker, he's all right, you know? He's going to be comfortable on the set because he's comfortable. He ain't worried about shit. He's ready to just take care of what he got to take care of in front of him, you know?
When I walk in that set, even though I need that money to snort coke tonight, I need a rent, I need to get a plane ticket next week to New York, I'm walking, I'm gonna shed all that. That's when you become a real actor. When you walk in there, you shed that fucking desperation.
Yeah,
you can. I used to sell cars. You gotta shed that desperation. Even though I need this motherfucker. God, no. Either you do it or you don't. You walk in there cool as a motherfucker. What? I was looking for a job when I found this one and shit. Stop it.
It's hard. It's easy. It's harder to. The joke is the Jews always worry about, but it's hard not to worry about stuff sometimes.
Can't worry about nothing.
How did you learn how to do that?
You believe in anything they taught you when you were a little Jew?
No.
You believe in any of the gods or Jeremiah to walk into?
Not really.
You gotta believe. You gotta believe in something. You gotta have
a higher power, brother.
You know? And like I tell people all the time, you know what? If you don't believe in something, it's great. Just believe in yourself. Okay? You're an atheist? But do me a favor, because once you start believing in yourself, you go, damn, this shit ain't happening because of me. I'm getting this good fortune from somewhere else. And then you'll deter and go, wow, yeah,
exactly.
Something out there. It may not be God. Maybe it's fucking Lucifer with a haircut. You never fucking know, we say that. You know what I'm saying? You never fucking know. It's just amazing when you think back at this time. And that's where you get your strength from. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'm like, fuck, I remember when I used to wake up struggling. No money, you know, because it's one thing not having an egg, but it's another thing not having an egg and not having $40 for the fix that night. Because the whole day, that's on your mind.
Yeah,
when you're talking to people, you're looking at their teeth to see if you can rip out a gold tooth, you know, because you need $40. You can't focus. You're like, oh, you know what, maybe a SAG will send me a check today. Right. You wait for that mailman to walk down the block. And as soon as that motherfucker walks out the building, you walk in there and check your mail and you got nothing in there. It's...
You know, my thing is, you know, like, even now, it's like, about being clean, is that I got less to worry about, you dig what I'm saying? Because I don't got to worry about getting high, homie. I just take care of my family and my boy and my wife, you know, that's my life, you know what I'm saying? And we're okay, you know what I mean? We're going to be okay, you know, a hug, that's enough for my boy. I mean, he loves his little toys and his little Nintendo and all that stuff, but you know what? Give me a hug, Dad. He goes, give me a hug, Dad, and I love that, homie. That's, can't buy that stuff, brother, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's crazy. It's inspiring to hear. And, of course, you never wish that someone would go through that. But it's cool seeing... I'm sure the people who are listening... Because you said, Joe, you get, like, a bunch of emails about addiction.
Every fucking
It week. Must be cool Every seeing week. Two people who've gone through it and come out the other side. Because there's a lot of examples of people who haven't made it out.
Most don't, bro. You dig what I'm saying? And that's the honest truth, bro. You know? And it's fucked up. You know, you just got to give sobriety a chance, bro, because... You know, I'm not going to say it makes life easier. Life is still going to hit you, bro. I mean, life hits me once in a while. You dig what I'm saying? I'm sober, but you know what? I can manage that shit. I can say, okay, I know how to duck it a little bit. When you're fucking, when you're stoned and shit, you're just standing there getting hit. You know what I mean? Fuck that.
It's amazing. I didn't put this together until about a month ago on the podcast. I have a friend that moved here with me, and she's still fucked up. And I thought that after, you know, she saw me get off the powder and get it together and shit. You know, it's amazing, Emilio, that you made one little sacrifice, but so many doors opened for you by making one little sacrifice that you knew it wasn't a sacrifice. It wasn't good for you.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It wasn't good for you, bro. It wasn't healthy. It wasn't getting you fucking nowhere. It's amazing when you could tell something. Like now, this is what I tell people. I'm like, listen, man, let me tell you what happened to me. It was so mind-boggling to stop getting high that... You want to close that door, play? It was so mind-boggling. I stopped getting high that it opened up all these other avenues. I mean, it just opened up the podcast. It opened up the you know, going on the road. It opened up my door. It opened up getting married. I did so many things after I stopped getting high. Like, it opened so many fucking doors by taking care of this one little fucking problem. This one little nagging fucking problem that unless you take care of it, it's not going to go away. It's going to scratch at you every fucking night. And yeah, you might be able to chuck and jive for 3 or 4 months, because we all did. Mm-hmm. You chuck and jive, but you know what? It's always there. There's only one way to fuck with it, and it's just lock the door and turn off the light. But, you know, it's easier to say than to do it. I just wish that when people watch this podcast today or listen, whatever the fuck, it could be done, and it's a beautiful fucking life out there. People think, bro... if I don't get high, I'm not going to be social no more. Fuck those bitches anyway. Fuck those punk ass bitches
anyway.
You got
to cut. It's hard to do, bro. But let me tell you, see, this is my thing. You know, when I used to get high, like they say, if I bought a bag, you know, I'd buy two bags. One bag was for me, and you guys can share that. I always buy it for everybody, bro. But I would buy two, like I said, whatever it was. If it was two bags, if it was two dippers, one's for me, you guys share that. That's enough for you guys. I just don't want to share my shit. I bought my shit for you guys. Just because I was a pig with my drugs, you dig what I'm saying, bro? You know, I was no good like that, but I really was, you know.
It's amazing. And now you haven't stopped working.
The point I'm trying to make. So when I got clean, the guy that helped me get clean, he goes, you know what? You gotta cut your friends loose. I go, hey man, I can't cut my friends loose, bro. He goes, oh, you're not gonna have to cut your friends loose. He goes, when they come and ask you, let's go party, just say no, and they'll cut you loose, bro. And you know what, bro? In two weeks. You find out who your friends are.
They real cut you loose.
You know what I'm saying? Because I ain't buying for you no more, homie. You know what I'm saying? You gotta find somebody else to buy my shit. You know what I mean? And you'll find out your friends who are real quick, bro. Real quick.
And that's a complete different other fucking animal. That's a complete different level of life when you think that, when you realize it was all a party for them.
Exactly.
It hurts more than anything in the fucking world when you.
But you just gotta say, all you gotta say though, bro, is fuck them, real quick, and get on with your own self. You know what I mean? Because ain't nobody give a fuck at the end, bro, but your family. Really, that's what it is, bro. And all you're doing is hurting them because nobody else gives a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like I always say, man, doing time for me was like another fucking day outside. It was when people loved me, came in to see me. I had to look at their face. I had to sit in the box and look at their face, and I could see their, not pity, but they had this look on their face like you let them down. That's a fucking horrible feeling for me. Anything else that bothered me about prison didn't. Yeah, guys kicking my bed and saying, wake the fuck up, cocksucker, it's whatever time. That bothered me. But when my people came to visit me and I had to look at people who cared about me, because the people who make the trip are people who care about you. And when they're sitting across from you and they can't touch you and you got a glass in between you, that fucking hurts. You know, you go back to yourself thinking, look what I did to the people that really care about me. Because the motherfuckers at the bar that you were drinking with, they ain't going to make the hike on a Sunday morning or a Monday afternoon to come see you. They're too busy still. They're out there keeping it down for you. That's what they'll tell you when you get out, right? Bro, we're keeping it down for you, bro.
I was running down for you, bro. But if you look at it now, bro, even till now, the same people that have been holding it down for me the past 23 years is my mom, you know, my brothers, you know what I'm saying? My new wife, you know, those are the ones that are holding it down for me, bro. The ones that are going to take me when I wasn't partying them out, bro. You know, so they were trying to tell me to get clean, you know. And I mean, now they're proud that I've been clean, you know. But they've been there from the get, bro. Never left, you know. Never left.
Is it a struggle for you guys? I mean, I know Joey. I mean, you said you don't really get urges. Do you get urges to like do any of that stuff, or it's been so long that like fuck?
You know what, man? You know, my thing is like, of course, I'm an addict for life. I always get urges, you know. But you know what scares me, bro, is that, you know, God has been good to me, bro. He, you know, I believe in God. You know, I'm not a church-going guy, but I'm a God-fearing man, you dig? And he's given me so much to spread the word that, you know what, don't do this, don't do that to the young kids, the new generation. I'm scared, bro, you dig? He's given me a gift, and you know what, I'm going to run with it. And if I were to back, you know, slap him in the face, he would give me that backhand that would fuck everything up. You know what I'm saying, bro? So, you know, sometimes, you know, like I said, you get hit by life, bro. Sometimes you say, man, what the fuck's going on over here? And sometimes you think about that. Don't get me wrong. You know, I've been there. You know, that was my life for a long time. And then, you, like I said, I count. Counting has been a big thing for me. I look at my boy. I'll fuck him up more than anything else, bro. I can't fuck up my boy and my wife. You know what I'm saying, bro? It can't be selfish no more. See, he's selfish, bro. You got to think about how many people you'll hurt, you know?
The big circle.
You know what I'm saying, bro?
Yeah, because it's old news now, and there's been more people who've done it, but just the story with Philip Seymour Hoffman, where he was sober for 20-something years, and then, like, just the story that, like, what do you think about when you hear something like that?
It's terrible, but you know what? I see it. I mean, that shit happens, bro. You know, I mean, there's been guys that have been clean 24 years. They say, I'm going to get high one more time, and that one time they get high, they're done, you know?
Fuck.
It's happened. It happens a lot more than you. It's just that he's known that these other people are not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it happens more than you know.
It's very sad when you go back. That's why once I go forward, you can't go fucking back. It'll come back to bite you in the fucking ass. Who was your first casting person that cast you, brother?
My first casting person was what, man.
Who's the first casting director I cast? Damn.
Man, that's fucking, I know it was Renegade, it was Dick Wolf Project, you know what I'm saying? But
that was your first job, in Law and Order or something?
No, it was a Renegade, bro. You know, Renegade.
No shit.
Yeah, with the Lorenzo Lamas, the biker show, and here I am doing the biker show all these years later. You know?
So, before you did Renegades, did you ride a motorcycle?
Oh, I've been riding for since I was 14. Since I was 14. Oh, yeah, bro.
Okay, all right.
I've been riding for 30s, shit, almost 40 years, bro.
So, how long were you on Renegades for?
It was a two-week gig up in San Diego, and It was a good time. You know, Jesse Body Ventura, I was working with him as well. He, at the time, he was the mayor, not the governor. And he saw me. You know, when you're first on TV, they taft hard to you. And that's like, means you're green, you know, the first time, your first gig. So he's looking down. He goes, "Who's Taft Hardy?" And I go, "That's me, Jesse." And, you know, he's a big dude, homie. He picked me up over his shoulder, and I was a lot lighter, too. And he started bouncing me off his shoulders, going, "Welcome to the SAG." It was a nice introduction, bro. You know, it was really cool.
Well, how did you make the transition from drug addict for 11 years to being an act, doing, did you go to like acting classes or
what? I did theater, bro. But this is what happened. I did stand up comedy. But the thing was that I would watch, I've always loved TV and cinema, bro. You know, and I would watch these guys trying to play guys like me, and I'm thinking, they ain't doing a good job, bro. You know what I'm saying? So I said, I can do better than that because they're trying to be me, and I didn't. And at the time, it was me and Danny Trejo, and, you know, we ran with the shit, bro. We really did. And it just, after 3 years, I was able to make a living out of it. You know, it really worked out, you know. It was good, man.
How long have you known Danny Trejo for?
I've known Danny for about 20 years, bro.
Jesus.
We did 20 years because it was always me and him against each other. It was just me and Danny all the time. And then Conair, we did Conair in 95, and we were together for 3 months on the road, you know, because we were filming out of state, you know, Wendover, Nevada. So we really hooked it up then. We really became good friends. And Danny's that's a solid motherfucker, bro. I love his stories, and he's there. He gives his time. He gives himself a lot, bro. He's a good guy, bro. You know.
It's funny. I met him at a NYPD Blue audition summer of 1998, and it was one of the best times I had in an audition.
He's a good guy,
bro. He walked in there with the warm-up suit, you know, just to see him, and I talked to him, and it was just a great conversation, and I saw him when I do the meetings. I do the comedy for the shows, and I always see when he walks in for the conventions how everybody treats him, and he talks to everybody. He's not Danny Trejo. He's just a regular guy from the hood, and that's where you really see what the guy's about, you know. And you see his success, and you're so happy. I just watched Machete 2 on the fucking plane the other day. I don't give a fuck. That's my boy. You know, I watched it. I giggle for a little while. And it's amazing what he's done in this town and what you've done in this town.
Thank you, bro. It's been a blessing. And the thing is that we come from the street, bro. We come from below scratch. You know what I'm saying? And then we appreciate everything. You dig what I'm saying, bro? And that's the thing. Is people appreciate what you got because it'll be gone tomorrow that quick. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know what I mean? And I appreciate what coming from nothing. You know what I mean? It's been a blessing, man. It really has been.
What would you have said if, like, you in the middle of your drug addiction, someone told you the ones that you'd be acting in movies and being doing a Dick Wolf production? Like, what would, like, how would you have responded to that if someone said that?
At the time?
Yeah.
Because I was so fucking cocky. I said, yeah, I know I could. You know what I'm saying? Because I used to walk the neighborhood, you know, local out, but I would always be with dark shades. It would be 2 in the morning. The cops go, "You think you're Hollywood?" "That's right, motherfucker, I'm Hollywood." And then they punch me and knock my dad and break my... You know how many glasses have been broken on my face, bro? You know what I'm saying? Back then, the cops were... There was nobody with cameras filming you and shit. They would beat the fuck out of you, especially on the east side, you know?
Jesus.
Yeah.
What was your first big project that you said, fuck, I'm onto something here?
Con Air, bro, in 95. You know, they cut me out a lot of the movie, but I made a chunk of change. And a year later, I was able to buy 4 homes in my neighborhood, you know, and I never looked back. That was when I quit my day job, you know, and I already had 4 years clean, you know. I got clean in 90 and 5 years clean, and I didn't have to work again.
You bought 4 homes in your neighborhood?
In my neighborhood.
For who?
For me and, you know, me. You know, my kids were 12 and 11, and I bought one. They stayed in, I gave them one, and I rented out two. It was good.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was nice.
Chappelle was in that with you?
Hmm?
A lot of people,
Chappelle,
right?
You know, and this is before Chappelle was Chappelle. Yeah. He was funny already. So we go in his room because Chappelle was a story. He could tell stories, bro. And he would go in there, and he would just smoke a joint, and then he would just, we all sit down and just listen to his story. He would just talk, bro. And we would just fucking laugh our asses off, and he would say, I'm going to be a household name. He would say, I'm going to be a household name, you know, and sure enough, Chappelle got big, bro. But that was back in 95 before Chappelle was Chappelle. You dig?
How long were you on Con Air for?
4 months.
Wow, that's a great check, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great gig, man.
And that's when the movies were the movies, but they gave you everything. They exactly. gave you a sandwich.
I'm still getting checks now from Con Air, bro.
Yeah, oh, please. They still fucking play.
And they're still decent, you know what I mean? Because I've gotten a check for, I did a movie called Mi Familia 20 years ago. I got a check the other day for one penny, bro. I swear to God. But I still get checks from Con Air, $1,500, $1,000. This is, what, 15 years later, bro.
What were you on Mi Familia?
Me and Jimmy Smits, who's working with me on Sons of Anarchy now, me and him robbed the store. He brings her
dad. In the beginning.
In the beginning, you know, when he gets out of jail, I go, you fucking know,
if
Jimmy.
I tell you something, that's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Is that right?
Bro, when that little kid jumps on the table in front of his in-laws and he goes, pinche puto blancos, whatever, I fucking lost it the first time I see it. I love great that scene. Movie. I think great it's scene. A beautiful story. I think they did a fucking great job. You know, half the people in the movie were Puerto Rican, but that's all right. You know, that was the big joke of the movie. Great. Jennifer Lopez, Jimmy Smits. Let me tell you something, because I didn't want to speed up this much, but that motherfucker, you know, the last episode of last season, it's you and him talking.
Jimmy Smits, yeah.
You called him and...
giving him an ultimatum, yeah.
And it was a great episode. And I'm looking at him... episode 4 from the first season before he came back.
Okay.
When he goes to other friends of mine, I forget what his kid is, his he used to be friends with Montoya, and he shoots him in the head and he goes, you want me back? I'm back. Hey.
Oh yeah.
And it's amazing how the first time I seen this motherfucker was on the pilot for Miami Vice. Nobody knows that. Jimmy Smits was on the pilot for Miami Vice. He's the first cop. He's before the black guy.
Is that right?
In the beginning, that he's married to a he plays a Cuban.
I didn't know
he
that.
He plays a Cuban, and he's talking about his wife, the crib, and what the fuck you gonna do. And Don Johnson's giving him an ear beating. Then they go to meet a drug dealer, and there's a bomb, and they blow him up, and they fly him in. It doesn't matter. What my point is, that's 1984. It's 2014.
Oh wow!
Do you understand me, guys? You know how good fucking Jimmy Smits is? Do you have any fucking idea how good that motherfucker is 30 years later?
He's a good guy.
Bro, I met him at a Janet Jackson concert. He asked me if I wanted something to drink. When he was on NYPD Blue, he didn't know me. I was just sitting next to him by mistake. Somebody just gave me tickets from a radio station. He went to get up and he goes, can I get you some? I said, sure, water. He brought the fucking water back.
Great
you know?
Guy, man. And it's funny because when we did Mi Familia, me and him robbed a store together in the movie, and he was wearing a penalty. I go, bro, don't put it on. And then some lady was trying to, wardrobe was trying to fix it. I go, that's not the way we word. He goes, listen. He goes, tells the girl, I'm going to go what he tells me. He goes, how do you word this, bro? And and it's funny, 20 years later, here we are working together. I love Jimmy, bro. Jimmy's a great guy, man. He really is.
It's amazing that I've been saying for years, like, we write people off because they're not a star, but they continually get better. Just because you don't see them in a show, they're doing movies in Yugoslavia with Armin Asante, who's no fucking, you know, you stand in front of Armin Asante, you better bring your fucking A game.
He's a badass, bro.
And, you know, so these people continue to get better. Now they come back to TV by some fluke, their number comes back, and they come back to TV. I mean, I don't think he's ever been off TV.
Well, he had a show called Kane, which was a great show. I don't know why they
canceled it. Yeah, I love that show.
He was on Dexter.
He did a great job on Dexter. So you look at this guy and you go, how good is this motherfucker? How good is this guy that he's still working? He's coming back for another season of Sons.
I think he got,
which will be three.
And then, you know, another thing, too, I mean, in his character, now I'm really digging his character now because I'm feeling sorry for the guy. He was doing great. He ran into Gemma. Now Gemma's, you know, she's bringing him back into the game, you know what I mean? Which he was trying to get out of the game, and I'm feeling sorry for his character, man. You know, I really am.
So how important is that to you guys, like, the relationships that you, not that you have to be best friends with everybody, but you were with Jimmy Smith, I don't know when Mi Familia was made, like, a while ago, mm-hmm. and now you're working together now.
94.
If you were an asshole to him on Mi Familia, or if he was an asshole to you, now when you're working together, it might not be as nice. Like, how... Like, do you have to think about that every day? Because you're not going to like everybody.
Well, the thing is, just, you know, and I do, though. You know, even if I don't, I do. You dig? Because in this business, bro, one thing that takes you a long way is be cool to everybody. You don't know who the fuck who is, bro. You know, I just love being nice. You know, it makes it. We gotta be together 14, 16 hours, bro. I'm gonna be fucking nice because I don't want you to be an asshole, because there ain't no sense. Because now I gotta see you all fucking day for 16 hours. You know what I mean? So let's get along. You know, and that goes a long way. It really does, man. You know,
it does.
You know,
yeah, man. It does. Yeah. It makes a lot. You know, the first two movies I did, I was a comedian. I want to get there. I want to shoot because I got shit to do. I got coke to snort. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a fucking horror show. It's a horror show for a guy like me. Maybe for a guy like you, like to move. Mm-hmm. We're in the mood. When are we shooting? Next. And you're like, what the fuck? And then you eat lunch and another hour. And you're like.
You got there at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then one day it comes to you. Like during the longest shot, I would go in. I'm going in to make a fucking living. A living that 100,000 people in LA would want. Why am I sitting in a trailer, Matt? Bring your iPod. Bring your book. Bring your notebook. Bring 3 DVDs. There's a DVD player in the fucking trailer. You don't have to be bored if you don't want to. Take a flight. When you take a flight, you're going to fly from LAX to Jake. Don't tell me y'all. It was the longest flight ever. It was come prepared.
Yeah.
Bring your iPod with 600 songs. You know what? Eat a pot chocolate bar for the last 3 hours. So when you're in the air, you're fucked up. I always do. I eat a fucking chocolate candy or something when I'm in the air, so for an hour or two, I'm fucked up. I got the pad, you got the book, and you got the notebook. Plus, they play a fucking movie.
Yeah, man.
What are you bored? What the fuck are you bored? How are you bored?
So you're not worried about your lines? Because I have no acting experience at all, but I would think you'd be worried about your lines the whole time.
Well, I have a bad memory. Because I did so many drugs, my mind is shot.
Okay.
So and I'm one of those guys, I'll be studying my lines till they say action, brother. You know what I'm saying? I got a bad memory, but you know what? But and then I gotta act. It's not just saying lines, bro. You gotta fucking act behind those lines. You dig? You gotta put some behind those words. So I'm always like, I'm starting a movie in June. I got another movie on book for in June. I got the script right now, and every day I just look at the motherfucking script. You know, I don't put anything solid in my head, but I always read. I'll read like 5 pages a night. Tomorrow I'll read another 5 pages and keep on doing it. So that way, when it comes, it makes it a lot easier. You know, a lot of times you don't have that it's not that how would you say privilege to do that. A lot of times today they'll hire you there and you'll be working tomorrow, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I really gotta burn my brain. But
well, I do a couple podcasts, and I was doing one yesterday with a guy. We talked about movies, and we're talking about how Joey, like we're talking about editing and how you're hard to edit for sometimes for comedy, because you never tell the same joke twice. But I'm sure on TV and movies, directors, like you were saying, you started acting because the people who were playing you weren't doing a good job. If you don't get the line to the word exactly right, have you ever had a director be like, just say this how you would say this?
Most of them
most do. Of the time.
Yeah.
They make it your own, you know, cause it becomes you. But there's a couple of people that you cannot change a fucking thing.
Okay.
There's a couple of some writers are just like, you know what, I want to hear my words. And it's like an actor wants to see, you want to do your actions? Well, he has his right to hear his words. You dig what I'm saying, bro? You know? But if it's not the character, I'll argue that. I'll say, wait a minute, I wouldn't say that, bro. That's not my vocabulary. You dig it? And a good writer, a good director will understand that, you know.
It's pretty weird because when I do TV, I have a hard time. But then I know now at this level that when you do TV, you stick to the word.
Exactly.
Because that then, you don't think it's important. But that then is there for some fucking reason.
And also, and mainly on TV with comedy, you got to stick to the word because they're setting up the punchline. You dig what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay.
It's a set up.
So that has to be on point right there.
On point. When you do a movie, 9 out of 10 times, you could add a flavor to it.
Yeah.
The director will tell you, we're going to do 3 takes. My way, your way, and one for the fucking stars.
Exactly.
Let's rock this motherfucker.
Yeah. And, okay. Say, and when you're done with all the shit that they wrote already, they say, hey, Mito, try one your way. This is what you got. Boom. And it's fine, you know? And usually they'll do the one that you did. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, do you ever get pissed off? Like, let's say a writer who wants to hear his words is like a guy who looks like me, like a white guy, and he's writing for what your character would say. Like, why don't you just, like, why don't you have me write it? Or why, like, do you ever get pissed off at when that happens?
You know, when it's like that, I'll just tell him, like, and I do it a lot. I'll say, you know, I wouldn't say that, bro. And I do it very politely, you know, because you don't want to hurt their feelings either, because you don't want them to kill you off. And, you know, and they want them to write for you down the road as well, you know. And the writers are pretty powerful, bro. And they write for you, they write with your mind, which has been happening lately, and I love it, bro, because it's respect, you know what I'm saying? You got to respect them.
It's really weird when you add a line to something. You know, I'm the same, man. I'm respectful of their words, but sometimes One problem I really had was on the Luis Guzman pilot.
Oh yeah, how did that go, man?
Luis Guzman was a guy that I looked up to. You know, I'm uglier than him. You know, there's only two ugly Latinos, me and him. That's it. And I got the pilot, and I was going to recur, and I had the pilot shoot. They gave me a line that said, "Hey, amigo." And I went to the director, and I go, "Not for nothing. This is 164th Street. Ain't no motherfucking amigos here, Jack." They don't use this word, Puerto Ricans. Bro, he fucking started a war.
Who did?
The director went to the writers and the producers and said, "Joey." And I go, no. What I said was he wouldn't say amigo. Luis Guzman came over, he goes, "He wouldn't, but we're saying," you know, like he was like, just for the sake of argument, I go, "It's not the point. The point is he wouldn't say amigo on 160 fucking First Street. He would say something else." And they shot the pilot, everything was good, and they hired a different cop.
Which wasn't you.
Which wasn't me. And the show got canceled after four episodes, so I didn't give a fuck. But the point being, because of that, and I said it the right way, I was great for that pilot. You know, it was a Julie Ashton. It was one of the Fox pilots I had booked. I was cool till that moment. Up to that moment, I was gone. You know who the producers were in that movie? Mm. That the main producer of Scarface, this was his son. Mm. Remember he did a couple movies? He did the Carlito's Way 2.
Mm-hmm.
Remember they did the before? He was the director on that. Oh, he was the producer on that, because they were telling me, "You're going to probably get a role in that," but since they didn't recur me after that. But it was all because of that word.
Because you didn't want to see amigo.
And it's funny, years later, I bumped into the director at the Comedy Store. "Hey, how you doing, bro?" It wasn't up to me. They didn't like it. "No, it was you, cocksucker. Why are you lying to me? We're at a bar. So, it's dark out. Who cares?"
So now if you were in the same situation, would you just not say anything?
Yeah, I wouldn't say nothing. I would say nothing if he came up to me and said, "How do you feel?" If after I said the line, he goes, "How do you feel?" and I already had it in the can, the amigo, mm-hmm. I would say, "Can I shoot it a different way?" That's how I would do it. Let them decide it.
Yeah, he's
that's how I would do it. Let them decide it editing.
Okay,
let them decide later. "Oh, we like that line. You should have said that already. Say it again." And all of a sudden, you won them over, and the writer's like, "I like that." Bam, you didn't disrespect nobody. But if you go in there fighting it, "Can I try it a different way?" That's a way to do it. And that's, you know, after 20 years, I've been here 13 years, and I've acted fucking in big movies every year and TV shows. So at that point, I've gotten better. I've improved. Yeah. I know that when I'm on a set now, you don't have to tell me nothing.
Yeah.
When I walk on a set now, you don't have to tell me fucking dick.
I have a new series coming out on May 22nd. It's called Gang Related, and we have 12 people that write for that show, and some great writers.
What channel? Does people can watch it?
Fox 11, okay. Yeah. After the American Idol finale, is going to be great, you know, 9 p.m. But the writers we have there, so it's a mixed group. It's Latino, black, and white, and they all got flavor, man. You know what I'm saying? And once in a while, they say something that they what do you think, Emilio? Or they'll ask anybody that the cast members, "How can I do this?" They go right ahead. You know, of course, they talk about it, and they go, "You know what? Go right ahead." You know, so that's really cool, man. Because you know, you want to keep it real as possible. So what you did there was not wrong, Joey. It's just I would, like you said, I would have done it differently.
I tried to be Al Pacino.
I would have done it one way.
And I shouldn't have. I should have done it. That's how he learned. That's experience. Yeah,
exactly. And so I would do it for them. And I'll say, "Hey, can I try one for you now? Can I just try something different, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have probably got your part at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's the way to do it.
You learn it with experience. Yeah. You learn it with experience. Now, this gang related, you know, I'm a faithful Law and Order, Sons of Anarchy guy. Every Tuesday I'm there at 7 o'clock. You know, last season I fucking waited. And I waited, and I waited. And finally, I think I called you. I said, "What the fuck, guy? What happened?" You're like, "Oh, no. I'm working on Gang Related."
I was on the series, yeah.
And then they put you in the ninth episode, the last episode. The last two episodes. So I didn't know, because they cut out. Even Danny wasn't around more.
Yeah, Danny wasn't around. Danny's been busy, bro. Yeah, man.
Yeah, he's always fucking busy now. But it's so funny you were doing Gang Related. But now you came in with a movie you shot. See, Don Coño, I'm sorry. Water Power, a movie you shot 2 years ago. Tell us the story. $600,000 budget, the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a movie we did. We did the play 7 years ago at the Martyrs Forum, and it was well received. And it's a very, very good play, bro. And at the time, I always played different characters. You know, Culture Clash, right? Culture mm-hmm. Clash. Well, they were the lead characters in this movie. They liked the movie, the play, so they made it into a movie, and me, Isaac Morales, and Jesse Borrego were invited to Sundance to workshop it. with Richard Montoya, the writer director. That went good, and then finally we got the funds to do it, man. And here we got two years later, and we're coming out on May 2nd. And so it's a real good story, man, about two brothers. It's a love story, I call it, you know, about what brothers would who are tight brothers would do for each other, and one makes the ultimate sacrifice. So they fuck up big corruption back in the day, and it comes to bite them in the ass, and it's really heart wrenching, man. You know, and I'm the guy, and my guy, the cop, that one of the brothers, he's a cop. And I'm in a wheelchair. He shot me in the back, and I'm paralyzing the whole movie. But I'm his eyes in the street, and you know, we're like brothers, you know, bonded by the street. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're looking out for each other, and but we know it's gonna be not a good ending. You know what I mean? And ultimately, it's not, and it's just really good, man. You know.
And you got Edward James to executive producer.
Yeah, man. You know, Eddie came aboard, man. Mr. Edward James almost came aboard, and he opened a lot of doors for us, man. I mean. You know, it's a small movie. You know, great, well done though. And Eddie, we had a private screening for Eddie, and he saw it. He goes, you know what? I like this movie. People need to see it. And he got us 20 screens at AMC, man. You know what I mean? And then he just got us his huge billboard right there on the 5 Freeway. And, you know, Citadel. You know those blinking billboards.
Mm-hmm.
He hooked it up, man. You know. So and actually, May 3rd and 4th, me and Eddie will be there signing pictures, taking pictures for 3 hours.
Where's the premiere at?
Well, the premiere is going to be right here in downtown. That's just going to be a premiere for the Gloria Molina's throwing a nice party for us and stuff, you know. But when we open on the 2nd, the 3rd and 4th, we'll be at the Citadel, me and Eddie Rodriguez almost, and taking pictures of the fans, you know, to show our appreciation, you know.
That's cool.
And this is the Sun's last fucking season.
And this is the Sons of Anarchy
last
season.
Jesus Christ.
I know, I hate it, right, bro?
I'm sick to my fucking stomach. That's my Tuesday night. I've already watched these seasons fucking 3 times. I can't do
exactly,
anymore.
Exactly. I mean, not because I'm on the show, but I'm also a big fan of the show, bro. It's really well-written. And it's, has a little bit of everything going on. They got some funny going on. You got that love story going on. And it's got a lot of violence, you know. So yeah. I know, man. I'm stuck, too. I don't know what's going to happen. No. Gang-related. Gang-related is not FX. It's Fox. But you know what? You're going to have your fill of...
violence.
Oh, what's yeah. it? What's like? What's it about?
It's gang related. Is a cop played by Ramon Rodriguez. He grew up in the streets. He was like an orphan, and my boss was an ex gang member, and he brought up the kid. You know what happened? Now he's a big time cartel guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy, he has two. So one cop is one of his sons played by Rigo Lagos is still the gangbanger, Jay Hernandez. Is the banker of the family, and then that one guy, the little kid, he's a cop now. He works for the SWAT squad, you know, the police squad for the gangs, right, for the gang intel. But that's what saves us, because he knows all the shit. He says, "Hey, don't go here." You know, he's in caught in between, bro. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
And I'm the hitman for the family. You know, it's really good stuff, man. You know what I mean, he's caught in between because we're trying to get out and try to make our own everything legit, but. When you try to do that, bro, they keep bringing you back in, you know. It's really, really good stuff, man. Really, I'm really proud of it, you know.
That sounds cool.
You're always doing something, bro.
You're blessed, bro. Savage. I've been blessed, bro, man. So it's been a lot of fun, man.
You're a nice guy, man. People always say good things about you. Every time I see you, put a fucking smile on my face.
Right on. So all right, same too. When I see that go to an audition, we go there, and it's just like an instant laugh at both of us.
Instant,
bro,
we just start.
Do you guys go up for the same roles? It seems like
sometimes.
Do we really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, we've been a few times. Mainly commercials, though. You don't talk
about commercials. Yeah. Have you been going out for commercials?
I just did a commercial on Sunday with William Shatner, bro.
No.
Really?
Yeah, he plays a biker, bro. Freaking pretty cool.
One of those Priceline commercials?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, the helmet. He looks really cool, though, man.
So I have no acting dreams or whatever, but I realize I'm in a room with like two huge actors. Like, people listening who might want to act, do you have any, like, advice that you would give?
Yeah, I got that advice to give, bro. Just the thing is, first of all, if you can't go to a community college, this is the cheapest way of doing it, bro. Go to a community college and take a little stage, take a little acting for the camera, because it's a lot cheaper. Because the schools are really expensive, and half of them, bro, it's a ripoff. You dig what I'm saying? So see if you can really do it, you know, and get your tape and see and look at yourself and see if you believe yourself. Because you can believe yourself all you want when you're talking, but... when you see yourself, say, shit, I didn't believe that. Because you got to make the audience believe. You dig what I'm saying? So that's just start off like that first. You know?
Okay, that's cool.
What about you, Joey? What do you say?
You know, man, I have 10 different schools of thought. You know, I like to play away.
Yeah.
You know, my whole thing was I never really did theater, so I would love to go to New York. Like they just did I just found out they're doing Bullets over Broadway in New York. I would love to audition for that. There was something there for me I would have got. Right off Broadway, fucking whatever, you know, whatever that guy's fucking name is. I wish I would have done things like that, you know. I didn't. I started as a stand-up comic. I went to an acting class in Hollywood, and I did 12 or 13 weeks, and I started auditioning.
Is that right fast? Oh, wow.
But it was funny because when I was auditioning in the beginning, there was a lot to audition for, and I'm a hustler, so I would buy the backstage and send submissions. Right. And audition for college movies. I would leave the store and go up the mountain and shoot a fucking movie from 3 in the morning to 7 for no money and sleep in my fucking car and eat and take the fucking roles for the morning. You know, it was, I wanted to be a good actor. You know, I knew that staying in acting class for 10 years ain't gonna do it. You gotta do it. It's like anything else, you gotta do it. And now, I go on a set and I'm a bad motherfucker on a set. I could tell you that. Now I'm so comfortable. You know, I tell about a story, I got General Hospital. If I would have got General Hospital 10 years ago, I would have got fired. Have you ever done a soap, General
Hospital? Yeah, I did all of them.
And General Hospital, they don't fuck around. No, they don't even talk to you.
No, that's all soaps. That's because some of them are not. It's not that the actors are bad. It's just that there's no time.
There's no time.
They'll come into your room and say, here's two more pages. Okay, we'll see you in 15. You know, it's that kind of stuff. So it's really, it's no time. It's not that they're bad. It's just that there's no time.
I didn't say they were bad. I said that because of the years I put in as a regular actor, when I got on a soap, I couldn't believe it that there's no fucking around. If I would have came in here new,
ready, bro.
If I would have came in here new and not knowing what I know, I would have failed. Yeah. It's like doing it's like when you do a Spider-Man 2. You did Spider-Man 3.
Did Spider-Man 3, yeah.
When I did Spider-Man 2, it's completely different than doing a $100 a day movie.
Yeah, because you know what, you're going to be shooting the same thing over and over and over and over again. Sometimes I don't even get to go, we nailed it, and they'll say, yeah, just do it 10 more times. You know, it's like great, but it's a different budget. It's
fucking amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the guy who opens the door for you, the chick who brings your food in the morning, the chick who brings your clothes in. When you do a fucking $100 a day movie, guess who brings your clothes? You do.
Yeah.
Guess who irons your clothes? You do. Guess who brings that sandwich? You got to go get it. You know, and you learn the differences in different type of movie making.
Exactly.
What you, and a lot of people, you know, I can't see if I would have just moved here and would have just done a bunch of big movies. Yeah. That's great, but someday a friend is going to say, hey, man, I got this movie, $600,000, I want you to shoot it 3 days and get it. And you're like,
you don't have the luxury to, you better be ready, brother. You know what I'm saying?
You got
to
be ready. You got three takes.
It makes you better. And what's good is it makes you better, bro. You know what I mean? Because I remember we did a movie called Road Dogs. One of my favorite movies I've ever made was Road Dogs. And we did it for $200,000. We shot in 14 days. And we shot on film. And we literally, they would be like, and it was a big scene. They'd be, Emilio, look, bro, we only got like 200 feet of film, bro. This is pretty much enough for one take. Are you ready to go? Like that, bro. And I said, let's go. You know what I mean?
Fuck.
Yeah, man. Where I work with, I've been blessed to work with Jim Carrey over in 3 different films. And you work with Jim Carrey, and you're like, he'll do it 26 times, bro. He'll go, and he'll watch every playback. He'll do it, and he'll come back and go, he'll watch it. Okay, I'm going to try something different. Come around. Oh, Jim, but we're done. He goes, don't worry, I'll pay for it. No, we're good. Jim Carrey's a badass motherfucker. I love that guy.
I grew up loving him, like Ace Ventura.
He's the best, bro.
Ace Ventura is solid.
And he's so
I auditioned
funny.
For that with you. That was at
Bruce Almighty.
Yes, yeah. We've seen each other.
It was supposed to be a 2-day gig trying to be 6 weeks, bro. It was beautiful, man.
Really?
It was beautiful. Jim Carrey, that's a good guy right there, man.
A 2-day gig that became 6 weeks. How about you, Peep? You're going for your job. You're going to work with Jim Carrey. You get in there the first day. You do the job. And then as you're leaving, they go, can we talk to you for a second?
Yeah.
Are you available next week?
And you know what's so good? Check this out. This is how cool he is, man. He, you know, I was done on a Friday, but I had to go to Mexico because I was filming The Shield, you know, so on a Monday. And, so they call on the Friday night, going, Jim Carrey needs me to go back for one more day, and they'll pay for him. And so we had to work it out with The Shield, and Shield was cool because I wasn't going to film until Tuesday. So we came back and did the little reshoot on Monday, and he offered me his helicopter guy to fly me to TJ, bro, right? And so, and then my friend Rolando Molina was working with me. He goes, dude, bro, that's status. I go, yeah, but I don't like no helicopters, bro. So you know what he did? He got me a chauffeur limousine, and he chauffeured me. He had somebody drive me over there. But he actually offered me his helicopter. He rides around here in helicopters, Jim Carrey.
Does he really?
Oh yeah, bro. That's how he gets around.
Fuck.
And he offered. Now, is that cool or what, bro?
God damn.
He goes, Jim, Mr. Carrey, really appreciate you came back today, you know, to change your schedule for him. So he offered you. So that was really cool, man. I turned it down, but he at least gave me a car, you know?
You know what, man? I mean, being here for a few years, I've met some people, and some of the people who you hope are nice aren't. It's nice when, like, I've loved Jim Carrey since I was a little kid. It's nice to know that when, like, he's made millions and then he's still, like, he can be like a cool guy. Like, no, you know what? You would hate to have him be an asshole. Exactly.
You know, and when, like on our breaks, bro, he, you know, a lot of guys who just go straight to the trailer, he'll come out, like we're hanging out, he'll come out, and he would do impressions for us, bro. He's so good, bro. You know what I mean?
Were you ever at the store when he was there? Because he was there for like a very little amount of time, right?
Yeah. Never. I've never seen him anywhere. Never. Great guy. I wish, you know, I'd love to say, fucking, when I saw Ace Ventura, I nearly shit my pants too, like everybody else. But it's let me give some shout outs real quick here. Real quick, my main man Michael Silva, fucking Susan Marie Rasmussen, Bill Downey, Jewish Lightning, Sean F. Kennedy, and my man Oscar Nunez down there in fucking Fort Lauderdale. He came to all the shows. He told me to give him a shout out.
He came to all the shows. Oh shit,
came to like three of the fucking shows. That's also cool. Our sponsors, Nailed It Life, you bad motherfuckers. Vapor Pens, Los Gumis, Hermano, on it. I can't tell you, they just sent me another box of shit. The Alpha Brain, I'm back on it on Monday, but the Shroom Tech, that's what I took this morning when I did that kettlebell workout. It was fucking deep, dog. I did 10 swings of like 15 to 17 with four. I've never done that shit before. Yeah, right. I was huffing and puffing. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I did cleaning jerks. I did 5 squats after the sets of cleaning jerks. And I'll tell you, I'm getting a little better shape, but it's a fucking Shroom Tech sport. That shit, those mushrooms, that shit gives you some fucking energy. Go to onit.com, pressing the code word.
Church.
Are you fucking kidding me or what? C-H-U-R-C-H. Get 10% off, and if you stay with Onit and do the Onit by the month, they give you 20% off, and it gets delivered right to your door. Also, it's the weekend. You want to look sharp. You want to shave your face. You want to shave your fucking monkey. Everything's got to be beautiful. Dollar Shave Club. That's how they do it. Dollar Shave Club. It's tremendous. No more rusty razors. You don't got to stand at some pharmacy online with 10 fucking people who smell like hummus and wait to go through the line. None of that bullshit. You order it. You go on joeydiaz.net. You go to the Dollar Shave Club box. Press in.
Church.
Boom. C-H-U-R-C-H. You go to fucking Dollar Page Shave Club and you pick the program you want. $1. That's right. $1. $6. Yeah, that's right. $6 and $8.
$9.
You can pick your pack. $9. Don't interrupt me, cocksucker. $1, $6, $9. It gets mailed right to your house. Nice heavy duty blades. If you want to stab somebody, somebody sent me an email today saying that I was correct, that the fucking things are heavy. You could hit somebody in the head with a fucking nunchuck and break them if a burglar comes into your shower. Plus, you got the double blades with the aloe tip. Plus, they got the one wipe Charlies that you could order on the side for a little certain extra a month. Plus, they have the cocoa butter shave. Go to Dollar Shave Club, not tomorrow, not next, today, cocksucker, and press in.
Church.
Boom. C-H-U-R-C-H. Get your life together. It comes delivered right to your door. Also, Nature's Box, tremendous. They sent me another box, and they put the cocoa almonds in there. They were gone during the whole fucking episode of, I don't know, Take Me to Your Mother. Me and my wife devoured them. You ever have Nature's Box? Mm. They're fucking snacks, nutrition fucking picked. Whether you get the sesame sticks, whether you get the rice sticks, whether you get the black and white granola, whatever you do, it's fucking murder. You understand me? Tremendous. Go to naturebox.com on the joeydiaz.net ticket link.
Joey.
Joey. J-O-E-Y. That's right. Again, J-O-E-Y. Get 50% off your first order. I ain't fucking around. 50% order. And after that, you go back to prices and you guarantee to your order more every goddamn month. That's how we do it here at the church. What's happening now? What else you want from me, cocksuckers? Nailed It Life, on it. Dollar Shave Club, and who else?
Nature Box.
Boom! That's how we do it here at fucking the church. Or what's happening now? You know what I'm saying?
Did you see what Jordan Lee put on Facebook today? The guy he called into the podcast for when he did his first SAG gig today. He was a hand model, a hand double.
Did he really?
Yeah. So he did his first SAG thing.
Some kid called. I know this kid. He's been bugging me. He sent me an email. How do I do it again to acting? This is one of those, you know, that everybody asks you in this town. Mm. Then you see him a year later and they're fucking sweeping. You're like, what happened to acting? Ah, it was hard. This motherfucker stuck it up.
Good.
And I had him call in and he emailed me and he goes, can I call you? I go, yeah. I go, what's up? He goes, I'm eligible for SAG, but everybody's telling me not to join SAG. I go, well, why be an actor if you're not going to be SAG?
Yeah, well, this is, but the thing is this, watch, what happens is on this part of that, because people ask me all the time, if you're SAG eligible, there's a lot of stuff that's non-union out there that pay pretty good still, plus you're going to need tape. And see, it's easier to do non-union stuff and get that tape, because nowadays, if you don't got a reel, bro, it's pretty tough to get an agent, you know what I'm saying? So, and if you're just getting in SAG, and you pay ready to get in, now you're going up against 100 guys who've been in SAG for a long time who are very experienced, you dig what I'm saying? And and it's going to be hard. You're going to be competing against them, but you need that demo reel to get an agent. Now, how are you going to get an agent if you don't got a demo reel? How are you going to get into an audition if you ain't got no agent? Mm-hmm. It's a catch 22, bro. You know, so if I say if you don't have to get into SAG, because then if the second gig, if you get another SAG gig, you got to get in regardless. You dig? But I say
that's
don't,
what happened to him.
He had to get into it. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay.
He had no choice.
Yeah, don't get in until you have to get in and get some of that non-union stuff, bro. Because once you're SAG, you're not doing no more non-union stuff. You dig? You better not be doing it. So. Yeah, you need that demo. Get a reel, man. Get a fucking reel, because it's hard to get an agent without a reel. Because that's the first thing. Let me see your reel. Send me your reel. Where can I see your reel? That's not about resume. Everybody fucking lies on the resume anyway, you dig? Let me see what you're doing.
That's amazing. I never thought. Yeah, you could. I mean, people used to ask me for my reel for stand-up comedy. I'd send them a blank tape. And they'd say, it was fucking great. When can I hire
you? That's funny, bro.
Mark Babb in Houston kept abusing me. Me and Freddie sold. I need tape. He tapped up Freddie. And he got to say, Freddie, Joe, you got to send him tape. One day I said, let me try something, because I knew it was a power game. Because when you go to a club, they all have all the tapes on top of a TV with dust on them. And I sent them a tape with nothing on it. He called me back a week later, that tape is fucking funny as shit. Can I book you? Fuck yeah. He booked me as a feature. I'll book Bobby Slayton. So
and on the all flip that side, shit's I bullshit. I went to a casting, and I won't say names because hey, we all know each other as comics, you know, and I've done comedy, you know, me and Joey know everybody that we work together on stage. And I went to an audition, man, and there was two of my friends' demo tapes. They were comedy tapes that were sent in, and they were just in the trash. And I said, did you watch those funny guys, man? They go, hey, we didn't have time to watch it. They were just like, but you know how you have your headshot on the tape? You know, that was before the DVDs. It was, you know, the big old VHS, you know? I felt kind of bad, bro.
That's what kills me, because I just started doing this full-time and not applying to jobs. When you're applying to jobs out here, even like I was in editing, if you don't apply within the first hour of the posting being up, it doesn't matter how good you are, or if you don't know somebody, it's just going to get thrown away. So it's...
A lot of submissions, bro, you know?
Yeah, that's tough. And it's tough being the person hiring, too. I can't imagine getting all those submissions, and you find your person, but then there's still 800 people who applied.
Well, just like, even when there's cast, you know, it's the same thing with casting. Like, they already know sometimes who they want. But they put the word out, so you still got to see these 30 people where they know, and that's us because they already know who they want already. You dig what I'm saying?
It's really weird sometimes when you go into an audition and they already know. Yeah. They know they already have an offer out just in case, you know, and it's great that something, you know, sometimes you go to those things, you do really well, and something else
really
happens.
Okay.
You'd be surprised how many people go to an audition and they're not really prepared. You'd be surprised how many people don't know the game and they go to auditions. They get opportunities to go to big auditions.
I know, right?
In front of big casting people. I know I was that guy. I got put in front of some... I remember they kept calling me into NYPD Blue. I booked basketball and they kept calling me in. I went in for something one day and it was 9 fucking pages. And dog, I fumbled every page. And they were like, Joey, that's it. You gotta get it together. You gotta take an acting class.
Well, they did, huh?
Yeah, and I came back, and then they booked me again. Like, they liked me. They booked me for a pilot. NYPD Blue 2069.
Okay, yeah, I remember.
New York in 2069.
Yeah,
I played that.
Really?
Yeah, I played the guy at the corner computer that would sell, like, downloads. So you'd put, it was like what a newsstand guy would do in 2069.
But they hired you, though.
They hired me.
See, they saw something in you already, bro. You know what I'm saying? You just got to do the work, though. You know?
9 out of 10 times. Somebody was mad at me once. And I wrote him a letter, and he see me. Hey, man, you know, you have to think outside the box. For the longest yard, they didn't want to see me. And I sent the fucking, I went to Houston and made my own tape. I put a football helmet on with a tight shirt with my stomach hanging out. And I sent it.
Unforgettable character. You've seen Longest Yard, right?
That's what you have to fucking do in this business. You have to, if you want a job. If you want a job, 1,000 people are going to go into that room and say the same shit. That's why when I go to an audition, I always sign a little late. And I sit by the door because I want to hear everybody doing their shit. I want to go in there and do what they're not doing.
That's the key, bro.
Do what they're not doing, because then they'll go, fuck it, this guy's independent. I remember taking my pants off in the audition. They said, they go, hold on, Joey. They turned around. I kept looking. I didn't think about it until I got to the audition. The neighbor had, the guy's like a fucking one of those neighbors that's white trash. He's in front of his house with a kid pool with his wife. They don't even have a kid. And he's got a thong on. And he's outside with a hose, and the neighbor looks over and he goes, it's a beautiful world, you know, something like that. And I went in there and said, what are you fucking crazy? I had sweatpants on and tidy whities. I said, I'm going to go in there and take my fucking underwear off and my shirt off before they even know what's going on. It was like God was in the room. I walked in and they go, hi, Joey, great to see you. Hold on, give us 1 minute. And when they turned around, I took the shirt off and the sweats fell right off, and I came back out. And I go, you ready? And they go, hold on. And when they turned around, there I was with these tidy whities. And they started laughing. That's the first thing. They were like, what the fuck? And then the line that they gave me, fuck you. I yelled and go, yo, living like a doctor. And that was it. That's the line they used. It was over. Fuck it. They were like gone. When you walk out, you know you took the air out of the room.
I never forgot about that. I never forget your character in that movie. It was so hilarious, bro. It's just so, that's, you always want to see, you wanted to see more of you, bro. You know,
and it was fucking, because I didn't know nothing.
How long were you on there for?
17 weeks. And I didn't know nothing about nothing. I didn't know nothing about acting. I just knew that I was fucking crazy, and I had to put that into the role. And, you know, they hired me for 4 weeks first. Mm-hmm. And then they came to me after the fat scene on the track, and they're like, dog, you got to sign a contract. We're keeping you for the whole thing. Right, they had on. different. They were going to, like, leave me at the prison, or something was going to happen to me.
No,
was,
you had to stay there.
And real. They made me stay, so I was very happy. And I'm very, it's on every night on Showtime. People hit me up on Twitter every night the last 2 weeks.
And it did well at the box office,
too. Yeah, no.
Because I went up for that role. I was up for that, and it was at the end, it was between me and my boy Lobo, and Lobo got it.
That's right, yeah, Lobo, yeah, yeah, Lobo. Yeah, yeah. Lobo was a lot of fun. You know, man, I've been very fortunate also. I came here as a stand-up comic. With felonies, I was just killing fucking time, and all of a sudden I took it into my own hands. I knew how to get pieces to get my stand-up up, and I kept booking stuff, and it's been quite a journey. I never fucking knew I'd be in movies, bro. I always was such a fan.
But I've been watching you forever on stage, bro, and you're one of the funniest motherfuckers out there, bro. He really is, and because he just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
He just don't give a shit, you know. And he don't have no sets. I mean, you don't have like a. It don't seem like it, at least. Like, he has a setup to know what he's going to say. He just goes up there and just does it, you know? It's beautiful, man.
That's, you know, man, I do my set how I live my life. Fuck it. Go up there, take a chance, Columbus dick, cocksucker. Right
or wrong? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this movie comes out
May 2nd. Yeah, and it's really, everybody's been, you know, been real supportive, man. If you can, check it out. We got, like I said, what happens is real important the first weekend, because if nobody goes, they pull them from the theaters, man.
What's the name of it?
A Water and Power.
Water and Power.
Okay. AMC. And if you go on my Facebook or my Twitter, I have all the places where it's going to be showing you. There's 20 theaters, you know, and trying to fill them up, you know. And there's going to be, I'm going to visit 8 theaters that weekend. Whoever's like selling out the pads, me and the cast members are going to pull up and we're going to sign autographs, give out some posters, and so try to get out there, man. It'd be great.
Now, it's going to be here in Studio City in North Hollywood.
Yeah, it's going to be at the City Walk for sure over here. We got up in City Walk up here. We got
and it's going to be AMC in North Hollywood up there in Victory.
It's going to be there.
That's a good movie theater. Yeah, they got like a little thing. It's cheap. Let's have a fucking party up there.
And it's really cool that AMC is doing it, because like, especially for like movies like that, most people might never get a chance to see it.
That's
but AMC's trying to do that. Like, AMC played Shawshank Redemption the other day, and I didn't have time to go see it.
They did, huh?
Yeah, they played it up in Burbank. But it's like, for people watching or listening, go support this, even if like you don't know anything about the movie, just so someday another movie can get in. Because like, all these movies, all these shitty movies that are coming out nowadays, that are in for 8 weeks, and Anchorman 2 and all that, if you support these kind of movies, AMC is going to say, okay, we can make money with this.
And this one, it's a great story, man. It's a touching story. And if you're about the family, it's something that you would do for your brother, and vice versa if he's a good brother. You dig what I'm saying? I mean, mm-hmm. They take it to a little bit to the extreme. I mean, I can't say what happens, but it's really sad, man. It really is, you know. But they fucked up, and like you say, whenever you fuck up, it's bound to bite you now somewhere. When your life is at its peak, when it's great, mm-hmm. That's when it comes down, you know.
Is there a website for the movie?
Do you know? Oh, yeah. There's a Water and Power Film on Facebook. They have a, I don't know about the website.
Let me check.
Yeah, it's called Water Power Film.
I'm happy.
And if you look at the trailer is really good. And I star in the movie, I also narrate the whole movie, bro.
Oh, cool. Now, did you have anything to do? I know you said it was a play, but are you producing it? Or
I'm one of the producers in the movie as well, bro.
What's it like just starting to do that now, not just acting?
That's a lot of work, bro.
Yeah?
A lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work. And then I'm doing one of podcasts, a radio station. TV show every day, just about, it seems like, you know. And but I'm digging. I love to work, but I'm happiest when I'm working, you know. And so I'm good with it, you know. I'm ready to go, man, you know.
So yeah, they don't have a website, it doesn't look like, but it is on Facebook, Water and Power Film.
Water and Power Film, yeah. That's also really on cool. Twitter as well.
They'll tell you what theaters it's at, and
we'll be at the MCA in Burbank as well, bro. You know,
oh, that's
cool. We get all the good theaters, which is nice, you know what I mean?
That's really, so for people, let me just look, okay. Oh, this guy did a bunch of good movies. So, like, just for people who, like, go for directors, it's the same guy who did Nacho Libre, he did Larry Crown, He did a bunch of cool movies. So this is like this. He did Encino Man.
Yeah, so, he's a writer for Culture. He's the main guy in Culture Club. There's three of them. There's Richard Salinas, Rick Salinas, Richard Montoya, who's a writer, and Greg Hibbers. They've been around 25 years now, bro. Funny cats, man.
That's really cool.
So there's a lot of humor in the, there's a lot of humor in this, but you know, with humor comes, you know, the drama. You know what I mean?
Drama.
Just like, it's like life, bro. You know.
Absolutely. Emilio, man, you know I love you. You're one of my favorite
Joey,
people
you
in the
fucking
world.
From the get, bro.
I'm happy you came down. You know, I wanted to get you on to talk about the movie so these people from the church could go down. You know, when Grudge Match came out, I had them all meet me Christmas night. And like 60 people met at the movie theater. And I'm
That's
gonna
do badass,
the same
bro.
For this. So as the movie gets closer, we'll make more announcements on it. And
thank you, Joey, man.
Emilio, man, I love that you came down here today. You didn't have to do this. You're the last of the real fucking Mohican.
No, you know what, man? I want to, you know, give it up to Joey, man. This guy from the get, we've always, you know, we've hit it off from the beginning. We first met. We support each other over the years, man. And anytime I call Joey for anything, he say, come on down. And that, and that love, bro, you got it right back from me. You know that, right?
Thank you, brother.
Right,
bro.
Thank you. I love you too, man.
So the church of what's happening now, like I said, this weekend I'll be in Tempe. And next weekend I'll be in Dr. Grin's at Grand Rapids, the 10th through the 12th. I'll see you motherfuckers on Monday morning. Lee, what are you going to do this weekend? You're going
to I'm coming to Tempe.
Lee is coming to Tempe this weekend. He'll be with us Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. He's getting on stage.
No,
he's
not.
Doing 18 minutes. He's fucking doing
Leave me
the jokes. He's eating gummy bears. And that's
going to happen.
I love you guys. Stay black and have a great fucking weekend. Thank you again, Emilio.
Thank
Water
you,
power. Don't forget, Cocksuckers. And Sons of Anarchy, the last season next year.
And do you have a Twitter?
Oh, yeah. Emilio Rivera 48. And also, my Instagram's the same. And I have my fan page on Facebook, Emilio Rivera.
Awesome. And I'm Lee Syatt. Don't forget to sign up for DollarShaveClub.com. Get high-quality razors sent to your door each and every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/church. Or just go to joeydiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. Show is also sponsored by NatureBox. remember to go to NatureBox and order great-tasting, healthy snacks at 50% off. Snack smarter in the new year with healthy and delicious treats like Everything Bagel Chips and Baked Sweet Potato Fries. Support this podcast and get half off of your first order. Go to naturebox.com, promo code Joey. That's naturebox.com, promo code Joey. And thank you to nailedatlife.com. Use promo code Joey Diaz and get 20% off of the best vapor pen on the market.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kinda hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I, somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few wins as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too. So turn off the lights and close the doors. But for what?
We don't let them hoes.
Yeah. So we gon' smoke an ounce to this. G's up, hoes down, why you motherfuckers bounce to this?
Rolling down the street, smoking indoor, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind. Rolling down the street, smoking indoor, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money
now
on my mind.
Back. I got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this type of shit happens all the time. You gotta get yours, but fool, I gotta get mine. Everything is fine when you're listening to the D.O.G. I got the cultivating music that be captivating me. Who listens to the words that I speak as I take me a drink to the middle of the street and get to mackin' to this bitch named Shady. She used to be the homeboy's lady.
Oh, that bitch.
80 degrees when I tell that bitch, please raise up off these N.U.T.s, cause you gets none of these at ease. As I mob with the dog pound, feel the breeze, biatch up just.
Rolling down the street, smoking window, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind. Rolling down the street, smoking window, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Later on that day, my homie Dr. Dre came through with a gang to tango rape.
and a fat ass Jake of some bubonic chronic that made me choke. Shit, this ain't no joke. I had to back up off of it and sit my cup down. Tangerine and chronic, yeah, I'm fucked up now. But it ain't no stopping, I'm still popping. Dre got some bitches from the city of Compton to serve me. Knock with a cherry on top, cause when I bust my nut, I'm raising the box to cop. Don't get upset, girl, that's just how it goes. I don't love you hoes, I'm out the dough, and I'll be
rolling down.